Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. She joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch most Mondays. Hi, Elise.
Hi, John.
Let's get started. Let's talk about the Dow. We're floating above 41 these days, aren't we?
Oh, my goodness. We were floating at a brand new high today for just a little while. We touched today at 41,420. It's fallen back a bit right now to 41,000, about 290. So down just a bit, another 100 points. But, I mean, we're talking around the margins here. This is all of the markets. Not really NASDAQ, I guess, a little bit lower, but everybody else, you know, S&P 500 is trading near or at its high, 52-week high. Same thing with the Dow. I mean, the markets are really powering ahead. They really like the fact that Jerome Powell on Friday said it was time for a change in policy direction.
Are you surprised, though, that the market responded so favorably to that?
I kind of thought it had built in a lot of this already. Like, you know, it was sort of telegraphed that this was going to happen. And there was such a disappointment that it didn't happen, you know, a couple of weeks ago when the Fed met. But here we are, you know, maybe it's Bing in Wyoming, I don't know. But suddenly the markets are like, oh, yeah, we're really all in. And I think part of that is the big drop that we saw in employment numbers. You know, we get these employment numbers all the time. And then there's a second revision and then a third revision, right? It's never exact. I don't know why, probably because we're pulling it from so many different places. But there was a revision to the number of people employed, a number of jobs created last year, down almost 900,000 jobs, almost a million jobs. Now, if you look at how many jobs have been created since in the past 4 years, it's something like 15 million. So a million here or there may not be such a big number, but that for the market, I think, cemented the idea that interest rates are finally heading down.
What is the Dow for the year then?
Right now, the Dow for the year is up 9.5% over the last year.
How about the S&P?
The S&P 500, let me take a quick look. The S&P 500 is up almost 18% just this year alone since January.
Elise Glink's talking to us from Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves about how well the markets have moved. So who is this David Rosenberg and why is he so bearish?
David Rosenberg is an economist. He's Canadian, I believe, but he worked for Merrill Lynch during the Great Recession. And he's known for being very bearish leading up to that. He wasn't the only one, right? There are a whole bunch of people who were, you know, crying out that there was something really wacky going on. But he was pretty much on the edge in 2006 and 2007. And he was the chief North American economist for Merrill Lynch in New York. And he just felt that everything was completely turned upside down, and he turned out to be right. And this time, he's been arguing that the Federal Reserve has also been behind the curve. They're focusing on inflation when the bigger threat is recession. But I will point out that there are a whole lot of economists for the past 3 years that have been calling for a major recession. You know, you and I have talked about this. Oh, there's going to be a recession in 2022 and a recession in 2023. And here we are in the back half of 2024 and no recession yet. But he has, continue to push this, especially, and he talks a little bit about it on X, he tweets on X, that the Federal Reserve should have moved the federal funds rate down already, and that the fact that they're calling for a change now is great. However, he points out the, 820,000 jobs that were mysteriously disappeared as being part of this early warning sign for a recession.
Hmm. Well, I guess if you say there's going to be a recession eventually, you know, depending on how long you get to say it, you're going to be right.
Absolutely.
But I think most of these people have proven themselves to be wrong. And it does appear as though whatever we're going to get will be that soft landing, that it's not going to be so bad. Maybe I'll end up being wrong, but isn't that what we've been saying for the last few weeks here?
Hey, we've been saying it for a lot longer than that, and I've actually been saying that I think we're not going to really have a recession as long as we're creating jobs. Last month, we created 114,000 jobs in this country. I think that's still somewhere around 14 or 15 million over the past 4 years. And there are a lot of jobs that are waiting to be filled. So if you don't have a job, finding a job is not as hard as it, you know, it could be or was back in 2008, 9, 10, 11, and 12, when it was very, very difficult to find a job that would pay enough to, you know, cover your expenses, which is why so many homes went into foreclosure.
Tim Walls does not have a brokerage account and pulled $135,000 from his retirement savings last year to pay for his daughter's college education. Tim Walls took $135,000 out of his retirement to pay for his daughter's college education. You know, you would think almost that in this day and age, if you're the governor of a big state or any state, somehow your kid gets into school and they don't pay because there's a scholarship or a grant program for people who are connected. I don't know. But I wonder what you or Terry Savage will say about taking the money out of retirement to pay for school like that.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, she apparently went to Montana State University, not his state, Minnesota. So as for, you know, the special things, it sounds like he didn't take advantage of it, if it does exist, and I have no idea if
it does.
I wonder
if they have reciprocity with Montana.
Well, he's still paying expenses, right? $135,000. I mean, yeah. In general, I don't advise doing that. You know, I don't think that you should rob your retirement to pay for college when your kids can take out a loan. Even though that interest rate is high, you know, you need your retirement money. But in this case, it's kind of interesting because his financial forms that he's filed now that he's running for vice president show that he and his wife together have maybe as many as 5 or 6 different guaranteed revenue sources in retirement. He's got a soldier's pension from 24 years in the National Guard.
What's that come to?
He might get about $8,200 a year for that.
I'm going to write these down. Keep going.
Okay. He also gets lifetime health insurance from the military, which can cover his spouse. So that's a savings as well. Teacher pension. He and his wife worked as teachers for many years. That could be as much as $65,000 a year. He's an elected official, so government, and he was in Congress. And so he gets, I think for one of them, $35,000 a year, and another one, he's got about $75,000 in it. The state contributes to his retirement plan as well. And then he'll have Social Security. And so when you add it all up, the Waltzes are going to have a very comfortable retirement.
That gets him $76,700 at least a year in pensions, and that doesn't include the $75,000 he has in another account as governor.
And Social Security, which is probably another, you know, $50,000 a year for him and his wife. If she just gets half of what he gets, that would be $25,000 for her.
Public school teachers don't get Social Security, do they?
They do not, but his other jobs, they do.
So he's probably, without lifting a finger in retirement, going to be $100,000 a year.
I would think closer to $200,000 a year.
And then who knows what future revenue streams he has. I mean, late in his life now, he's not that old, but
John, he's definitely not that old. He just turned 60.
60, right. So I'm just thinking that if he becomes vice president, that's 4 years of revenue, and then who knows what opportunities will befall him. And if he doesn't become vice president, I think he's going to be a commentator on MSNBC or CNN or News Nation. And I mean, really, the second half of his life is proving to be maybe more opportune than the first half.
I would say so. Certainly the speaking fees alone will keep him in corn, as they say. He's doing fine. But it is interesting to, you know, because a friend of mine said, well, I don't know if I can vote for him. He doesn't have an investment account. And I thought, well, I'm going to just look that up. Because I don't think that whether or not you own stocks and bonds is necessarily the true measure of how well you've managed your financial life. Nor do I think that it speaks only to whether or not you can comment on the economy.
Well, it speaks to most people. That is, if he's every man, most folks do not have, I've seen it before and I was disappointed what the number was. Now I'm not going to try and conjure it off the top of my head. But what percentage of the population has a 401k? And is it 50%? I'm not sure if it is. I don't think it is.
About half of Americans have some sort of investment in the stock market, whether it's a brokerage account or a 401k or something like that.
Okay, but say it's 50%. Sure. That's as much as we like to say, hey, the Dow or the S&P, half of Americans are not participating in that wealth generation.
That's right. And they should be. And he is to an extent, of course, and I know we have to go to break, but he is because he does have, you know, some federal investment money, and he's got, you know, his official, when he, being the governor of Minnesota, the contributions they've made have also gone into the stock market in general.
Hey, with 45 seconds left, what do you want to say about housing?
Oh, my goodness. We had a good month, finally. It's when interest rates start to go down, the number of people rushing out to buy is going up. That's good. We had a new home sales jump by 10%. And even better, pending sales of starter homes for first-time buyers rose 10% as well.
Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Click on Think Glink for more thinking like this. Thank you, Elise.
You bet, John.
Jim Dahlke is the director of communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative, and he's got an award ceremony to talk a little bit about. How are you?
Hey, John, doing great. Thanks for having me.
So Chicago Innos Fire Awards. This is kind of an intersection of your two worlds here, isn't it?
That's right. My former employer is going to host a nice big tech event at my current employer tomorrow night. So definitely encourage all folks who are interested in Chicago startups and technology to come to Chicago Innos Fire Awards event. This is going to take place tomorrow evening at Teamworking, which is the co-working space at TechNexus. And so that's at the Civic Opera House on the 12th floor. This is going to be an opportunity to mingle with really kind of a bunch of movers and shakers throughout Chicago's tech and startup scene. The Chicago Inno Fire Awards is really a recognition of, you know, the 50 companies and startups and organizations that really have had a banner year. So really over the last 12 months, who has really stood out in Chicago's tech scene. And that's what the Fire Awards are really about. So the list itself is got recognizes 50 organizations on there who've really had a terrific year. And they're going to be celebrated at the event at our headquarters at TechNexus tomorrow evening at the Civic Opera building. So come check it out. Yeah, there's a bunch of companies on this list, you know, that we've spoken often about. You know, there's everything from kind of early stage startups to later stage kind of growth businesses, companies that have recently gone public like Tempus, and companies that could potentially go public soon like ShipBob, and kind of everybody in between. And so it's going to be a great event, and there's still tickets available. So check out ChicagoInno.com. You can get a ticket to the event tomorrow night.
How many folks do you expect are going to be there?
Yeah, so we expect a couple hundred there, you know, everybody, you know, from folks who are on the list to those who are just trying to, you know, kind of better get connected with, you know, the people who are being recognized on this list. And so it'll be a definite who's who of Chicago's startup ecosystem at the event tomorrow.
Is there going to be a grand prize for the best new company or something like that?
Yeah, you know, the fun thing about the Fire Awards is that it's broken up into several different categories, and some judges have voted on kind of the top company from each category, and the top company winner from each category is going to be presented with a red blazer jacket. They're going to be the Blazer Award winners. So they're going to get kind of, it's similar to how the Masters gives you the green jacket, the Chicago Inno Fire Awards has the red jacket, so those will be on display tomorrow night.
And do they get to keep those permanently, or do they have to give them to next year's winners?
Oh, no, those are permanent keepers. So, yeah, they in the past, you know, we've had startups like Cameo have won this award as well for Chicago Inno. And I remember in their old office, they had it on kind of a mannequin in their office throughout the year. So companies have found creative ways to display their jackets who've won in the past.
I want to ask you about some other businesses in the area, but just one last thing about these Fire Awards. Then are there any companies that you think had standout years? Who will be the cream of the crop in your estimation without slighting anybody? Who's noteworthy?
Yeah, I think there's a few categories to look at. One is, you know, this clean energy category. You know, there's a company called Clear Flame Engine Technologies. It's a clean energy company. It's actually backed by Bill Gates's Breakthrough Energy Ventures Fund. They raised $30 million just last year. Really exciting kind of clean energy business. And then you look at companies like ShipBob. This is a company that's helping small and medium-sized businesses better ship their products. And, you know, they are preparing for a potential IPO, you know, maybe later this year. And so they're certainly a business to watch. And, of course, Tempus recently IPO'd as well. And so we've got everybody from kind of small early stage businesses to companies that are hitting the public markets.
I'm just reading from Biz Journal. Alex Zorn wrote, previous iterations of the list of companies that have been there include Intuit, Microsoft, GoPro, Patagonia, Oracle, Grubhub. Is it true that it's one thing to maybe get to that stage of development, but then to get to scale, that's a whole nother problem? And sometimes companies will come and go because they just couldn't get over the hump. Am I speaking in any sense there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the list of kind of the movers and shakers in tech and startup, especially in Chicago, you know, it's a fluctuating list, right? And, you know, one thing that's important is access to capital and, you know, growing their business and you kind of using that capital to increase their revenue. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, companies, some in Chicago grow their revenue at rapid rates. A new report from the Inc. 5000 recently came out, which is really an attempt to kind of identify the fastest growing companies throughout the country. And in Chicago, over 230 companies made the Inc. 5000. So they basically took a look at revenue growth from 2020 to 2023. And the companies that grew the fastest, the private companies that grew the fastest in that time. And Chicago, over 230 companies on that list. Chicago actually outpaced a lot of cities like Seattle, Miami, Boston, Atlanta, Houston, Austin, Chicago having more companies on the Inc. 5000 than all of those other cities. The top growing company in Chicago is Kin Insurance. They are a home insurance startup that's really competing with the behemoths in the industry like Nationwide and Geico. And, you know, they have created this sort of business to consumer home insurance platform. They've grown 7,000% over the last 3 years. And speaking of potential IPO candidates, they are one as well who we could see possibly go to the public market later next year.
Is that the one where you really don't necessarily have an agent? You just kind of click and buy what you want?
Yeah. So what they say is that they're able to provide, you know, more affordable home insurance by kind of eliminating that middleman, you know, not spending millions of dollars on Super Bowl ads and all kinds of marketing promotional materials that the traditional marketing insurance giants have to do. And what they say is, you know, they really found a niche in markets that are hit by extreme weather. And so they kind of specialize in sort of the Southeast and Texas and really kind of providing better insurance options for those folks. As, you know, as we know, you know, that area of the country has seen extremely huge increases in their insurance premiums. So Kin Insurance thinks it's got an alternative to the legacy products out there.
Wow. Well, that's a niche. I mean, and one that's getting larger all the time. I think if I was going to start an insurance company, I would say we'll take everybody but those people. But I guess all of a sudden there's a market as a result, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, the best entrepreneurs, you know, zig when everyone else zags. And, you know, Kin thinks that it's got an opportunity to provide, you know, an insurance alternative to an area of the country that really needs it.
One more. Talk about Create Health Ventures.
Yeah, this is a new VC fund here in Chicago that's going to invest in digital health companies. So Create Health just recently closed $21 million on a new fund to invest in startups. It's kind of based here in Chicago, and also they have a founder down in Austin, Texas as well. And so good news for digital health companies in Chicago. Chicago is a healthcare town, of course. You know, it's a growing scene of healthcare startups here in Chicago. And this new $21 million fund is going to, you know, hopefully provide some much-needed growth capital for startups here in Chicago. And so they've already started investing out of that fund and expect to continue to do so. So yeah, good news for digital healthcare startups in Chicago with a new fund in town.
If you want to hobnob with some of these fancy smart people at Chicago Inno's Fire Awards, where do we go? How do I get tickets for that tomorrow?
Yeah, head to ChicagoInno.com. Right from there, you'll be able to find the list of all the companies that made the awards, and you'll be able to buy tickets and find the event, which is taking place at our home at Teamworking at Tech Nexus, and we're excited to play host to this great event tomorrow night.
Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications there, Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. Nice to talk to you, Jim. Have a great night tomorrow.
Thanks, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Roadie has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The Mediterranean fast casual chain has 10 restaurants in Illinois, and the bankruptcy filing on Friday follows several years of financial turmoil that included multiple restaurant closures. Roadie's CEO says the company's been dealing with higher costs, tough market conditions, and mixed location performance. The chain was founded in 2007, and it focused on lunchtime business. That segment has suffered since the pandemic, as more people now work from home instead of at the office. Roadie closed nearly a third of its restaurants in 2021, including six in Illinois. It has 19 restaurants now, compared to 42 prior to the pandemic. A new robotics center at Northwestern University has been awarded $26 million from the National Science Foundation. The funding will help launch a new engineering program to develop dexterous robot hands with the ability to assist humans with manufacturing, caregiving, handling precious or dangerous materials, and more. Carnegie Mellon University, Florida A&M, and Texas A&M will partner with Northwestern on the robotics initiative. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And Chicago's largest restaurant is reopening for business today, serving some very discerning diners.
I don't always like to say they're picky. I do think that they are critical.
Who she is and what restaurant we're talking about after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, back to our guest.
Yeah, we like to say we're the biggest restaurant in the city.
You may have figured out we're not talking about a normal restaurant. On the phone is
Justine Britton. I am the food and nutrition program manager at Chicago Public Schools.
And with school opening today, I wondered about that huge job it must be to feed all those kids.
We served on average about 262,000 meals a day. So that's breakfast and lunch.
And she says, well, school lunches are dictated in large part by federal nutrition standards. Kids do have a say.
We take their opinions really seriously, and we do a lot of work to get out to schools, talk to students, collect their feedback so that we're making menus that are responsive to their needs.
I don't recall anybody asking my opinion when I was in school. We were on the take it or leave it lunch plan. But one thing that hasn't changed over the years, the favorites in the lunch line are the old standards.
Oh, yes. By and far, pizza, nachos, and like breaded chicken products. So like chicken patty, chicken nuggets.
And for kids who have special dietary needs?
A relatively new state law requires school districts to provide a plant-based or like vegan menu option. We do have a handful of schools that serve halal certified meat. And then we have some students who request a kosher meal.
By the way, what's it like in the lunch line these days?
We still serve off of trays, but they are compostable trays now. And you would grab your compostable cutlery and a napkin, and then you move down the line.
And here is the best part.
Everything is free.
Chicago's largest restaurant is open for business again. Cheeseburgers and veggie burgers are on the menu today. On the food calendar, it's National Cherry Popsicle Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Speaking of visiting and touring, on a phone line is Rich Gamble, interim president and CEO of Choose Chicago. I'll bet you liked the Chicago Tribune editorial on Sunday, Rich. Did you see that?
I did not see it, but I am quite sure that it sung the praises of our city, which is what is happening pretty much in every corner and every text message and phone call and email I've received.
No, they said it's a terrible city and no one should come here. And I was glad to hear that, because I think there's so many ways to judge Chicago last week. The weather was good. We didn't have any control over that. Did the Democrats put on a good show and message? Yeah, but that's their thing. Did the city present itself well with options? We did. Was transportation afforded and effective? And maybe a hiccup in the beginning here and there, but people got around. And did the police do their job and contain protesters? I mean, what did
Absolutely.
The city not do well last week? It was a home run.
The city did exceptionally well, and I am so proud to be a homegrown Chicagoan, born and raised here, and part of our civic and business community here.
So then how do you leverage that? I mean, what? How can you capitalize on that? What does Choose Chicago do with this good fortune of ours right now?
Well, what this does is help kind of reintroduce people to Chicago. Some have had a negative impression of our city, and they have been reintroduced and reminded of all the things that make us a great city. I mean, there's a reason why the readers of Condé Nast Traveler call us the best big city for 7 years in a row, and it's something that Chicagoans know. We have a plethora, an embarrassment of riches, so to speak, in terms of our culture, cultural options, our dining, our hotels, our natural spaces. And I think you had an opportunity to see that. I mean, think about it. We had the DNC, the Triathlon, and the Pink Concert, all of which are large events that activate the city in different parts. And, you know, you have people in town from all over the world who are getting a firsthand view for themselves, not through a third party saying what Chicago is, but they're getting to experience it for themselves. And, you know, by all accounts, it's been a phenomenal success.
You had the Cubs in town, two nationally broadcast shows originating from the city. What are some other events that are coming to Chicago?
Well, what's funny is the DNC is amazing. It's a high profile Nationals special security event, and we've had 15,000 members of the national and international media here. But one thing people don't realize is that in less than 3 weeks, we're going to have our largest convention, which is a little bit more than twice the size of the 50,000 DNC. We'll have 110,000 plus people here for the International Manufacturing Technology Show. And it's an amazing show. It's our largest one for the year. And that'll be just three short weeks away.
Governor Pritzker wants the DNC here every year, every 4 years, and that's not going to happen. They'll give it to another city, I'm sure, next time around.
Why not?
Well, clearly we're capable of it. The NAACP is going to have a convention here, right?
Yes, and, you know, the first NAACP annual convention was held in Chicago in 1926, and we're thrilled to welcome them back. The last time they were here was in Chicago was in 1994 with 40,000 attendees back at that time. And many conventions are building their numbers back. It might be a little smaller than that, but we're excited about it. And the presence of the NAACP, the DNC, IMTS, and there's there are several large shows, the ASCO show, the Association of Clinical Oncologists, and many others have made Chicago their preferred destination for these kind of events and many other.
The NAACP is in 2026. But isn't there like a food show and a home and houseware show? Those regularly come through here,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely. We had a national restaurant show in May that had 58,000 people. We had the air conditioning, heating, and refrigeration show back in January, February. That had about 48,000. ASCO had 40,000 members attending, and there's more and more, more to come.
So your group, Choose Chicago, are you the ones that are marketing outside the city to attract business, or are you advertising within the city to get people to come out and enjoy the riches, as you say, of Chicago?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Choose Chicago is the official destination marketing organization for the city of Chicago. In fact, the old way of saying it is we're the Convention and Tourism Bureau.
Right.
So we're here for both Chicagoans and folks that are not from the Chicagoland area to come, stay, play, do business, have their business meetings, have their conventions. So we're all about getting the visitor economy moving, which last year was a $19 billion visitor economy.
There's some pretty good guides and information about how to do Chicago, how to choose Chicago at choosechicago.com. Pat everybody on the back over there for us. Nice job, Rich, and keep us posted on what's going on in the city.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. We're here for you, and we're here for Chicagoans, but also to entertain and have people have productive and memorable meetings and conventions when they come to the city.
Rich Gamble's the interim president and CEO at choosechicago.com.